scrolling to May 14th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflug.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
And we are back again for episode 50 of this wonderful daily podcast that we've decided is a good idea in these interesting, interesting times that we live in. Reading through the short stories of Sherlock Holmes, today's adventure, the adventure of the Three Stooges. I mean, students.
The greatest of all. Yeah, sure. So settle down.
So, guys, what did you think of this story?
Doyle had to meet a deadline. And he needed something to write.
This is certainly different from all of the other stories that we've read thus far.
He was called into the local high school to solve a mystery.
And that was kind of my question. Was this designed for children? Was this there's something different about the tone of this story from the beginning.
Well, there is. And I kind of wonder if it's because they aren't in Baker Street, right? So Watson explains, I mean, that's no excuse, okay? For sure. But Watson explains, we were residing at the time in furnished lodgings close to a library where Sherlock Holmes was pursuing some laborious researches in early English charters. Researches which led to results so striking that they may be the subject of one of my future narratives. Guys, I'm ruining anything here by saying, thankfully, there is no future narrative that covers Sherlock's laborious research into the history of English property law. What's going on here? So, like, I mean, he's doing, no offense, but like the most boring research you can imagine.
And then, to you.
Well, I mean, sorry. I mean, it's fascinating work, of course. Small monograph on English charters. Who would want to miss the opportunity? So it's like he's in a different place, you know, mentally. And Watson goes on to explain, quote, my friend's temper had not improved since he had been deprived of the congenial surroundings of Baker Street. Without his scrapbooks, chemicals, and his homely untidiness, he was an uncomfortable man. And you guys, like, we love his scrapbooks and his chemicals. We love the fact that he has shot letters into the walls of Baker Street, right? Like, he's just a small little character outside of his space.
Do you think Doyle was outside of his space when he wrote this, and this was his exploration of how he's uncomfortable? Maybe he's at his mother-in-law's or something.
You know, off to the beach
for
the
weekend. I like that explanation.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
There's something going on here. This is a very different kind of story, and this isn't going to make anyone's top 10 list, let's say.
No.
Top 10 worst stories.
So we have a tutor and lecturer here, Mr. Hilton Soames, an original creation, you know, like Ricky Rouse or Monald Muck. Seriously? Hilton Soames? That's the name that he comes up with here?
I know. And even in the audiobook, which I listened to, you know, Holmes, Soames, it was sometimes hard to even distinguish. I know. I don't.
If you want to use the same initials and switch them around, make it Smith instead of Soames. Come on, Doyle.
This is the second time lately that a headmaster has arrived in Sherlock's offices in a state of great agitation, but our other headmaster had a much better name, which was Thornycroft Huxtable in The Adventure of the Priory School. I don't know, guys. So often as a professor, I'm in the position of like explaining to people, oh, you might not have loved this story, but let me like give you some details that will make you like, if not love it, at least see what it's up to.
Okay, so as an educator,
nothing here today. Forgive me.
So as an educator, we have an educator story here. Mm-hmm. This man has an exam that he is preparing and the papers have been tampered with. He says, my subject is Greek and the first of the papers consists of a large passage of Greek translation which a candidate has not seen. It's very interesting here as an educator to look at how much education has changed in the last 120 years.
Absolutely. And, you know, interestingly, this is a huge topic of debate nationally in terms of in the US only, I think, what's the importance of second, third, fourth languages, right? So how much emphasis do we want to put on multiple languages in the education of children and people in university? Even in a PhD program in the humanities, now you only need one second language, whereas not so long ago, you needed two.
Right? And again, that's specifically in the United States. I think Europeans still want to have more languages because there are so many more people within a vicinity that speak other languages, and communication is so important. But the emphasis on rote memorization and translation is really striking here.
Well, and it's interesting, though, because I think that having that second or third language, it's about much more than communication. It's also about developing a mental skill. Because when you're thinking in a different language, you think differently. I mean, French is my first language, and I think differently in French than in English. And certainly, I only did limited Italian in university. But once again, you actually get yourself into a different mind space. And imagine learning ancient Greek. Mm-hmm. I mean, have a whole different way of thinking about the world. So I think translation and this sort of like doing the passage, and this is what they do for a PhD exam, by the way. This is still how we do our PhD exams.
Okay.
And the students, a large passage of a, that they haven't seen before, they're allowed to have a dictionary. But this is still how we do the second language exam at the PhD level.
Okay.
Steve, you know, does Southside Chicago, does that count as a second language?
Yeah, that's a dialect. Okay. Yes, I can converse with people on the south side of Chicago just as well as I can on the north. I just change my TH sound. I say north when I'm up here.
Oh, well, how interesting.
We don't have a TH in the south. We're too poor. We can't afford a TH.
25 characters in the alphabet there.
LMNO is one character, as well it should be. So, these proofs of the paper have arrived from the printers, and the educator here finds that the papers have been moved. He left his rooms to go have tea in an accompanying teacher's room, and he comes back and the three papers have been moved. Holmes already knows which one is where. He says the first page is on the floor, the second in the window, and the third where you left it, he said.
Of course, Steve.
Why? Course. How? And there's no real payoff to this specific thing.
Steve, he's a detective. He should know these things.
This is the first of many parts of this where Doyle is not giving us a really satisfying puzzle in this story.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
He is playing with the word proof, which is funny. He says... Holmes says, have you any reason to suspect any one of them more than the others? There's these three students who are the suspects. Soames hesitated. It is a very delicate question, said he. One hardly likes to throw suspicion where there are no proofs. And Holmes replies, let us hear the suspicions. I will look after the proofs. Yes, there are two things called proofs here: the pieces of paper from the printer and the evidence for the case. This is a groaning kind of mystery here.
He's falling on his face here.
Sherlock is especially rude to Watson. This was a tough moment, right? He says. Yeah. He says to Watson that he doesn't have to come to the school with them, to the college. He says, not one of your cases, Watson. Mental, not physical. All right, come if you want to.
I have no self-esteem. Oh, you made me sell my practice. I'm a kept man at this point.
I know. Staying in these uncomfortable lodgings near the library with the charter histories. I know.
Just rude. And later on, he's explaining his findings to Soames, and he turns to Watson and says, Watson, I have always done you an injustice. There are others. And the sentence ends there. But we know what the rest of his meaning was there are others out there who don't understand things. This guy's not getting it, just like you don't get it, Watson.
What?
There, there, little man.
Oh, my goodness. That's just
it's almost like you got Bill Belichick as your coach or something.
Yeah, this is the rudest that Holmes has been. I swear, Doyle must have been in a really bad mood when he wrote this.
Well, guys, and sometimes, you know, there's got to be one story that's the worst of the 60. It's funny because I was recently looking at that very nice, I thought, Book Riot list of the 60. And honestly, this is one of my least favorites. This was like number 40 or something on her list, but I would put this much lower.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think this was, we're awfully, Doyle is obviously becoming very intimate with his readers because he's sharing so much about the Holmes and Watson relationship. Because, you know, Watson just finished his toilet, you know, as he noted in there. And then, of course, he says, Holmes says, hey Watson, you can give up breakfast now. We've got to go, right? You're okay with that, right? Oh, good Lord.
Well, now, let me just jump in on the toilet issue, because in my audiobook, it was mispronounced just as toilet. At 8 in the morning, he came into my room just as I finished my toilet, but it should be my toilet. And so in the 19th century, in English, people said toilet to mean, you know, brushing your teeth, taking a shower, like your morning ritual. And French to make it sound a little fancier. And so it should have been just as I finished my toilet. So he's just finished shaving. He's ready to go for the day.
Preparing for his day. Yeah.
Exactly. He's about to sit down for breakfast.
He's got his Old Spice on. He smells good.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that. It's the preparing for the day is what he's referring to. But still, even with that small difference in vocabulary, this is just, I just got ready and he's ready to go. And he doesn't really care whether I'm ready. He's ready. Okay, let's go.
Well, he's been out on the long jumping pitch, or whatever you call a long jumping area.
Oh, the track area.
And it's interesting because this story it's boiled down to the most basic elements, right? So detective fiction often uses the whole like means, motive, and opportunity as a shorthand. The criminal must have all three of those. And here, the three suspects, we only have three suspects plus the butler, right? Always got the butler as that option. So we have the three suspects. They have the same motives. They could cheat on the test. They have the same opportunity. Bannister left the key in the door. And then we have Soames, the headmaster or the tutor. He's trying to think of the character of each of the young men. He's focused on motive. But Holmes knows they have the same motive, each of them. And he describes the three. There are three suspects. Gilchrist, who's a fine, manly fellow. He's an athlete whose father has been ruined, so poor, but worthy. Dowlett Rass is an Indian, a quiet, inscrutable fellow, as most of those Indians are. He is steady and methodical. And
that's
McLaren.
Rude, too. That's rude, too. A quiet, inscrutable fellow, as most of those Indians are. That is stereotyping. Mm-hmm. Doyle.
And don't we know? They're okay? Native Americans, Steve. They're Native Americans.
No, this is a man from India.
Oh, I tease.
And then we have Miles McLaren, one of the brightest intellects of the university. He is wayward, dissipated, and unprincipled. So we have these three guys, and we can imagine who each of them is, whatever. But Holmes knows that what really matters is the means. Who had the way of knowing where the papers were and when? It's going to be the tallest of them, the only one who could peek through the tall window.
how brilliant.
What a terrible mystery this is.
And then to make it even worse, right? If you're like, okay, the tall one. It turns out Bannister's like, well, Mr. Holmes, you couldn't have known this, but I was Gilchrist's butler when he was a baby. I held him on my knee. And we're like, we couldn't have known that. Like the idea of fair play, right? And then Gilchrist appears and is like, hey, he's all hangdog. He's got this like letter in his hand. And he's like, hey, I cheated. Here's my letter that says that I did it. So this mystery would have been solved if Holmes had never even appeared on the scene.
Yeah, this mystery would have been solved if Watson had not written this and published it in a magazine.
He should have just published the little narrative about the English charters.
It would have been way more interesting. We need to know about laws and land.
And how was it divided up again?
And you guys, you know I love endings, but this ending is almost a cartoon. Well, Soames, I think we have cleared up your little problem. And it's like, no, like he appeared with his confession in his hand. And our breakfast awaits us at home. Just a reminder, pulled Watson away from breakfast. Come, Watson. As to you, sir, I trust that a bright future awaits you in Rhodesia. For once you have fallen low, let us see in the future how high you can rise. The end.
What is, what?
Well, let me clear this up for everyone, because this, not always, yeah, I'm sorry. Doyle doesn't always have a moral to a story, but we have a moral here. And I thought I would kind of sum it up for everyone who's having a difficult time understanding, you know, the premise of this story. So while attending school, if you deceive your superiors, cheat on an examination, and get caught, you can always join the police force in a foreign country. Yeah, that's how comforting that is, and how. There you go. You word of wisdom.
Leave the country is always the solution. Every time the ship doesn't go down in the storm.
Well, and join the police force, because why would ethics be an issue there?
So I would really love, I feel like the three of us kind of had the exact same impression of this story. So I would love to challenge our listeners. If anyone feels like we missed something, I really want to hear it, because I hate to say this is a little story without many redeeming qualities. But if there is something that we missed that you think really does make this story a decent one, let us know.
I'm going to add one other part to this. Young people make decisions, and those decisions sometimes are not always the best decisions. But one of the things that we can leave with this story also knowing is that people do grow, and they certainly can change, especially if they've had some kind of adversity in life. And people do have adversity. So there's, you know, we have a lot of graduates this year, and everything's not going to turn out as they plan today, but they do have the opportunity to always grow.
And become a policeman in Rhodesia.
Well, if they want to, Steve, there's always opportunity.
Every opportunity you're looking for, you can find it out there, even after adversity. That is true. That is reading between the lines of this for sure. But boy, yeah, if we missed something, if there's some character development of Holmes and Watson here that we're missing, please tell us, because boy, Doyle seemed to have been in a bad mood when he wrote this. Like he was staying somewhere other than his home, and he didn't like it. And this was his solution to his problem, I think.
I hate my lodging. Let me write this story.
That was the feeling that I got.
And my Greek tutor.
And my English charter.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yes, we would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Send us an email. We would love to hear your voice. Send us a voicemail. Follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes. See if somebody can salvage this mystery from our ravaging of it. Hopefully tomorrow's mystery will be better. The Adventure of the Golden Pince-Nez. Is that French?
Les pince-nez. These are those little tiny glasses that sit right on the end of your nose.
Oh, man.
Work on that pronunciation. Pince-nez.
Oh boy, I'm going to have to say that.
My vocabulary certainly is going up. During the
See, it's important to learn more languages, Chip. That's what we learned today.
My limited Southern upbringing has certainly been improved upon. Thank Good God job. For Canada.
That's why we call in professors for these things. Good job. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essen Blood.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
See you in the future. What I want to talk about is what I want to think for, what I want to